Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us, with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. We are Payne and Pendergast collectively. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm enjoying life, man. Settling into this bye week. I'm watching Monday Night Football last night. Yeah. And
Nick Foles show, as I like to call it.
The possibilities. And you know what? I tuned in just when Nick Foles made a couple of really nice laser tight window throws. Mm. And that's what Nick Foles does. He fools you, isn't he? It's interesting that he's as religious as he is, because what do they always say about the devil? The devil's going to come cloaked as something completely different.
Right.
And I feel like on a very, in a football respect, you know, he is a very, you know, Foles is a very devoutly religious guy. I believe that part. But in terms of him being a quarterback, he's the damn Antichrist. He just, which explains why he helped Philadelphia win a Super Bowl, of course. But he does all these things that lull you into feeling like, man, Nick Foles is the guy. And then he throws an interception on 2nd and 4 in the end zone that he had no business throwing at all. I saw this. He throws this interception, and I saw the highlight first. I was kind of dozed off, and I wake up, and I see the highlight. And I thought, surely that must have been 4th down. Why on earth would he throw across his body, off his back foot, into double coverage in the end zone unless they were going for it on 4th down. Nope, 2nd and 4.
2nd and 4. Yeah.
Yeah, 2nd and 4. They could have. It wasn't just 2nd and 4 in the extreme red zone. They also could have gotten a 1st down, yeah, too. Like, there was absolutely no reason to throw that ball, but yeah, that's what Nick Foles is.
That's what he does. That's what he does. So, so the Texans are on a bye week this week, and the gods have blessed us with the trade deadline also being this week. I was looking at Peter King's article yesterday, Seth, and he showed just the massive upward trajectory in the number of trades that now take place on deadline week compared to before. You know, they moved the trade deadline back a couple weeks a few years ago to try to, I think, you know, they probably did it with a logistical football reason. I would like to think, too, that the NFL is a smart enough marketing machine to go, hey, this also probably drums up a lot more interest in season in our sport. And because trade, people love this stuff. People love the rumors, and Texans are right at the center of everything right now. And the last 2 years, about 6-7 years ago, there would normally be maybe just a couple of trades made on deadline week. Last year, there were a dozen trades made on deadline
week. And none of those trades a few years ago were significant.
Right.
They'd just be backup players, kind of marginal moves or whatnot.
Jalen Ramsey last year.
Yeah.
Marcus Peters.
Jalen Ramsey now.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, those obviously the current ones that are actually more notable.
Yeah.
People start to anticipate this and get excited for it. And there's good reason to. I mean, the Cowboys just yesterday leaked that Everson Griffin is on the trade block. So obviously the Texans wouldn't be trading for Everson Griffin. I do think that Everson Griffin might be a good barometer for, okay, what's the appetite for a veteran player who's a little bit past his prime? JJ's better than Everson Griffin right this moment, I think.
Yes.
Griffin's had a weird year within for a lot of different reasons. But it might be interesting to see if Everson Griffin goes early or something. There might actually it might give a barometer for what JJ should get.
If Everson Griffin goes to a team for a 3rd round pick, then to me the market for JJ becomes at least a 2nd round pick, right? I mean, like you said, he's a better player. He's more productive. I haven't followed Everson Griffin closely enough this year to know what he's been health-wise this year, but JJ, we know, has been largely healthy all season long. He had that groin issue that he alluded to earlier in the season that kind of bumped his snap count down in weeks 2 and 3. If I'm the Texans, if I'm whoever is examining this trade market for them, and my guess is that Easterby is spearheading it, but it's probably a collective effort behind the scenes involving the group of people that O'Brien used to allude to anytime we asked him if he was the general manager. I'm guessing those are really the people that are pulling the strings on this now as opposed to O'Brien himself. Yeah, I mean, if Griffin goes for a 3, then I think, boy, you got to think long and hard about J.J. Watt going for at least a 2, right? If we're doing, it's like the real estate market. If we're doing comps, you know, hey, that defensive tackle right down the street just went for a 3rd-round pick, and he doesn't have crown molding or granite countertops. You know,
Ben, I don't know if you had a chance to edit that Texans Bill audio yet.
He did.
Yeah. I feel like I want to play this like 3 times today. Texans Bill, who's a devout listener to our show, yesterday, he put something on Twitter just as he was pulling into work at 8:45 a.m., which leads me to believe that's probably sometime around when you and I were casually discussing whether or not J.J. Watt was worth whatever as a trade item or whatnot. And go ahead, Chuck.
No, I was not going to say, if he's pulling into the work parking lot too, it's probably when he was at his saltiest just in general as well. You know what I mean? Like, most people aren't pulling into the parking lot in most jobs in the greatest of moods on a Monday, you know?
So this was Texans Bill yesterday.
Hey, guys, pulling into work, trying to stay calm. I just need to know if some of you ain't f***ing idiots want Jack Easterby's to trade J.J. Watt right now. And some of you's the same ones that were sitting there last night on Twitter going, oh, look, Carlos Hyde, could have used him, wink, wink. Oh, look, Dondra Hopkins. Ow, why did we have to trade him? Oh, because we're idiots. And now I got to watch David Johnson every week. So y'all solution is to let the man who shares responsibility in that, go ahead and handle the J.J. Watt trade, huh? Mm-hmm. That is f***ing stupid. I don't give a shit if his value is greater right here in November, October than it will be in March. Let a real GM trade his ass in March. He's under contract 2 more years. I don't care if his value's higher now. I guarantee a real GM probably going to get better value then than Jack Easter bitch is going to get now.
Wow!
Oh, I hadn't even caught that last little part.
Aggressive
there too,
at the end.
Whoa! Damn. JJ's only under contract for 1 more year, but unless I think maybe Texans Bill meant like including this season, it's 2 more years. But he'll be a free agent in 2022. But which is a valid point. You know, he still has value. Although I wonder, in some respects, right now is when teams start to get a little bit desperate. In a good way. Like, the good teams, they start sniffing the goal line. They start smelling that potential championship. And that's what Bruce Arians alluded to it the other day when he was discussing signing Antonio Brown. He said, we're too good a team to not bolster every position possible and look down every road. So it could be that JJ's value is higher right now than it is in February, March. Remember, March, April, May, teams are thinking about the draft. They're thinking about, okay, no, we'd rather bring in young guys. And then maybe next August or so, we'll see. So if the value is out there now, and if JJ were amenable to it, then that might be when you want to do it. But he also brings up a really good point about Jack Easterby. We don't know right this moment how much of all that aggression with the trades was Bill O'Brien versus Jack Easterby co-signing it. And do you really want him to make any kind of substantial move right now when you've got a new GM, you've got a new head coach coming in just a few short months?
There's so many layers to the J.J. Watt thing, too, to where you can't even compare it to any of the moves that O'Brien and Easterby have made up to this point. You know what I mean? Like, just the whole PR aspect of J.J. is so wildly different than any of these other moves that the two-headed GM along with their merry band of scouts have made over the last 2 years.
The biggest thing I would say is you never want to make short-term decisions. Well, you never want to make long-term decisions based on short-term pain. Mm-hmm. And right now there's a whole lot of pain within the franchise and us as a fan base. I do think, hey, as nice as it would be to see J.J. go off to a contender, if the Texans actually knock it out of the park with the GM and the head coach hire, and you bring in somebody that can make a lot of changes immediately, it would really suck to see JJ somewhere else while the Texans had a competitive squad next year.
Yeah.
And JJ could have been a part of it, you know. So I'm not in some desperation mode where I say you got to get as much as you can for JJ right now.
Yeah. To me, it just depends on the deal. Like, Seth, it just boils down to, if it's a first round pick, then you drive him to the airport. If it's a second round pick, you think a little harder about it. If it's anything lower than a second round pick, and by the way, it should only be draft capital that you're going for here. If it's anything lower than a second round pick, I'm with Texans Bill. Wait and let the market coalesce again come draft time. I think you can find a couple teams that might be willing to see JJ as sort of a final piece in March. Maybe not as easily as you can in October or November, but I think you can get that market going again. All right, I saw the most beautiful thing on social media yesterday. It was absolutely gorgeous, and I watched it on a loop for 2 hours. I'll tell you what it is next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate all of you listening. Seth, I saw the most beautiful thing on social media yesterday. It was gorgeous. It was only an 11-second video, but I hit play, I hit repeat, and I watched it on a loop for 2 hours. I just sat there, sat by the pool, and I pulled out my laptop, and I just sat there and I watched and watched and watched Yordan Alvarez running on a treadmill. It was the most beautiful sight these eyes have seen. Yordan Alvarez, a slender Yordan Alvarez, jogging gracefully on a and practically galloping, Seth, on a treadmill yesterday. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. Healthy Yordan.
So he had that knee issue that I told this story a little while back, but I guess it bears repeating. Just if anybody worries about Yordan, you know, having long-term issues or anything because he had these seemingly chronic knee issues. He had a torn patellar tendon, which hadn't been diagnosed. So, and I know initially a lot of people wanted to blame the Astros for this somehow. You can get MRIs on this, and I went through the same thing where it doesn't show up. It shows that maybe you got a little something going on, but then they cut you open to take a look at it. And it turns out, oh, like in my case, I actually had the middle third of my patellar tendon was torn all the way off my kneecap. And I'd been playing on it for 2 years. And I thought I was just a wimp because I was having a hard time dealing with tendonitis. Like every now and then I would just fall down mid-stride because my knee would collapse. And they thought it was tendonitis until they cut it open. So I think with Yordan, he'd been having these chronic issues that turned out to be a serious injury that he was just playing through. So if anything, like, I would expect Yordan to be even better. I don't think that all of a sudden he's going to turn into a, you know, golden glove left fielder or anything, but he might feel better, move better, maybe be a viable option in the outfield at times. And as long as he's back in spring training, I'm pretty psyched about it. Also, Sean, I noticed the same thing you did. He looked slender. I have a hard time with baseball players because they always look so much different in normal clothes than they do in their baseball uniforms.
Yeah, the baseball uniform can fit them kind of weird, right?
Like, well, and they're just not as big as football players, you know? Like, when you see, remember that picture of J.J. Watt with, like, Springer and Correa? Where you think of Springer and Correa as big dudes, right?
Right.
But then you see him next to J.J. Watt, and they look kind of tiny. So, if he is thinner, I think that's a good sign. That means he's not going to come back and all of a sudden be, you know, overweight trying to learn how to run on newly fixed knees.
He looked good.
So it's
he's a different kind of hitter. You know what I mean? Like, Seth, he's a guy you put in the middle of a lineup, and he is like transformational glue for the middle of a lineup the way he's next level. He's a guy who, as a rookie, he had a four-digit OPS his rookie year. Like, he is next level. He has the highest ceiling maybe of anybody in this lineup, which is crazy to think because they've, even without Springer and Brantley, still have some pretty good hitters in this lineup. You know,
yeah, and the biggest thing about him is he's still super super cheap, like Framber,
yes.
Like a lot of these other young guys. As you start thinking about trying to retain Correa and George Springer, possibly, perhaps, who now, because baseball's so weird, is completely and totally out there and a free agent. Astros County in the Chronicle, he actually writes for the Chronicle now. I forget. I got to use his actual name now that he's a bona fide writer. James Yasko.
Okay.
James Yasko wrote a piece in the Chronicle about how they could retain both Carlos Correa and George Springer.
It got me excited. I read it. It was good. Yeah.
Yeah, it involves a whole lot of not signing certain players, like Josh Reddick, which I think Josh Reddick himself also understands and knows that this is a coming, right? Josh is not going to make anywhere near $13 million with the Astros, at least, that he made this last season.
Right, right. Okay, well, let's Yordan is jogging on a treadmill yesterday. That's great news for the Astros. It was almost like out of sight, out of mind, as you're watching the Astros go through that postseason run. I don't know if I thought about Yordan more than one or two times that entire run, which is good. You know, you're not obsessing over somebody who's not there. They hit the ball well enough to where you forgot about him. Let's pretend the worst-case scenario, Seth, and if your wife is listening, Brandy, avert your ears because we're about to mention the possibility of George Springer not being on the Astros next year. So be forewarned. But let's pretend that Springer and Brantley are both gone after this year. We know they re-signed Gurriel. So those were the three big free agents that I think people in their heart of hearts would love to see all three back. But if they don't bring back Springer and Brantley, how do we feel about a lineup that goes like this? Altuve, Bregman, Kyle Tucker, Carlos Correa, Yordan, Yuli Gurriel. That's your 1-6. Then it gets a little sketchy. Then they probably got to sign a veteran outfielder. They'll need two outfielders, so probably a veteran outfielder, 7th, maybe Miles Straw batting 8th, and then Martin Maldonado is still your catcher. How do we feel about a lineup? If Kyle Tucker and Carlos Correa are what they were in the postseason, that's still a pretty damn good lineup. I mean, 1-6.
That's where with Kyle Tucker and Yuli Gurriel, I guess those would be the biggest question marks. Because we still have to think about the fact that it's a relatively small sample size with Kyle Tucker. You know, as good as he looked and as great a stretch as he had, it's still a relatively small sample size. Although I am optimistic about it. I just want to throw that out there that we don't know 100% for sure. And then Gurriel, look, I would just write it off as a slump, but he's also getting up into that age bracket where sometimes the slumps last forever.
Yeah, I guess I can't. I guess it'd be hypocritical for me to go, well, if Tucker and Correa are what they were in the postseason, I feel really good with it, and ignore the fact that Yuli was terrible in the postseason. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. I mean, I guess you can. If you're a fan, you can do whatever you want to do. But it's a little bit, playing both sides to say, hey, these guys could be what they were in the postseason, and then you got Yuli batting 6. Like, hey, Sean, hey, Seth, Yuli batted like 0.83. In the postseason, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But I still feel pretty good about that top 6 right there, even if Springer and Brantley aren't here next year. You know,
I feel good about it, and also, like, we always forget this. We were super spoiled for a period of 3 years because the Astros had one of the best offenses of all time.
Right.
You don't have to have one of the best offenses of all time to be a competitive baseball team or to be a contender. And I think the last two seasons have shown that in terms of which teams are still around in the last with the last four teams or so. So the youth and the pitching staff is the thing that makes me most optimistic right now. And but if there is an avenue, look, if it means, okay, you're not going to re-sign Reddick, cool. Maybe you say goodbye to Osuna, who by arbitration probably make $11 or $12 million. You're clearing up a whole lot of space that might make room for Springer. There's still, and we don't know how much any team out there really wants to spend in free agency right now.
That's the big thing, no doubt about it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday morning. So yes, Yordan Alvarez jogging on a treadmill. He looks good. It looks like the surgery. It looks like he takes to patellar tendon surgery very, very nicely. The trade rumors are swirling around the Texans right now, and these two Texans are the focal point of the latest trade rumors. We'll tell you who they are. We'll hear from Romeo Crennel about how he's handling all of this, all the trade rumors internally. That's all next. So Romeo Crennel is the interim head coach of the Texans. He had to know that when he took over, he'd take over an 0-4 team. You had to know that we're probably going to be involved in the trade deadline, but not the way we were 2 years ago when we traded a fourth-round pick for Demaryius Thomas. We are going to be the ones that are shipping players out. We'll get to the players that are at the center of some trade rumors here for the Texans in just a second. But here is Romeo Crennel when asked yesterday, what's the process for making deals at the trade deadline?
They'll come to me, and we'll sit down, and we make a decision about what we think is best for the team, And I've been informed of some possibilities, but nothing definite right now.
Oh, boy, Romeo gives things up. I love this. O'Brien never would have said that, ever, 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 ever. And that got people going yesterday. Seth, I don't think it's a big surprise. Romeo has been privy to some of the emails floating around. He's on that email chain, and he's seeing some of the rumors floating around right now. Juicy. Juicy, my friend.
I wonder what do you do when it's an interim coach, though, too? It's an interim coach who you very much respect and who's been with the organization forever. You know, it's not like he's just some schlub or something. But ultimately, you're asking for advice, right? But it's not like Romeo can go up and say, no, this guy's a non-starter. There's no way you're trading Senio Calamete. He's my guy. But they do have to ask him, hey, what's it going to look like if you get rid of this guy? Can you actually afford to, can you part with this guy and still be all right? But he doesn't ultimately have a whole lot of power saying it.
No, here's a follow-up with Romeo talking about, boy, other teams, are they going to look at the Texans, especially with an interim general manager and, you know, who knows what the structure is in terms of getting deals done with the Texans. Could other teams look at the Texans as easy prey?
I think because of the situation, other teams might look and feel like that we are vulnerable and we might be willing to make a trade for guys. But like I told the players, I'm trying to win games and I'm not trying to trade players, you know. And so I want to keep as many good players as I can. Now, I know the record doesn't say that we're very good and we are what the record says we are, but we do have some talent. And I think other teams realize that, and they would like to get their hands on it. But most of the time in this situation, they're offering peanuts and not offering legitimate trade value.
I love Romeo Crennel. The only thing that would have been better is if he followed up by saying, "This time, you know, at this time, a lot of them are only offering peanuts, and we're not going to do that again like we did with DeAndre Hopkins." That would have been great. A little O'Brien shade at the very end would have been the only thing that would have made that cut even better.
Do people think that we're vulnerable and that we'll give assets up for pretty much anything? Of course they do. But this is what you do. Yeah. This is what you do when people think that you're vulnerable. You walk in to that first day and you punch the biggest GM you can find in the mouth. You walk right up to Chris Ballard and you cold cock him, and then people will get your respect.
Right. Prison rules at the trade deadline. This is where we issue the Jason LaCanfora disclaimer. The Jason LaCanfora has an article on CBSSports.com, and Seth, here's the headline. NFL trade deadline. Texans anticipate moving players as talks continue with several teams around veterans. Now, this is a follow-up. This article is from Sunday. This is a follow-up to the article that he had last week where he sort of outlined, hey, Cal McNair has people in his ear saying he should move some guys to get some draft equity. These are the players that are being discussed. J.J. Watt was not one of the names that was in LaCanfora's original article. I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, the players in there were Merciless, Cunningham, Fells, Cooks, Fuller, and there was one more that escapes me right now because I remember there being six players mentioned in the article. This gets very specific here, Seth. He says that the Texans are devoid of draft assets and carrying several big contracts moving forward. Limiting the flexibility of the next front office. Rival executives expect the Texans will trade at least one receiver by the deadline. Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks are the most talked about at this point. That makes sense. They're the two best ones. And they are rival executives are gauging the market for veteran pass rusher Whitney Mercilus. I will say this about those three players. I think Fuller is going to get you more than Cooks will, even though he's on a contract year and Cooks still has three very manageable years left on his deal. I just think Fuller is a bigger difference maker for a contender. If they can get rid of Whitney Mercilus's 2021 guaranteed salary, which is right now guaranteed at nearly $11 million, they should 100% do that. They take a cap hit of a few million bucks to do it. But Seth Whitney has a total of 14 tackles this year. Like in seven games. And I know tackles are not the end all and be all, but it is a gauge of when it's that extreme, it is a gauge of just how little he's around the action. And he's getting paid $13.5 million a year on average right now.
Well, and the thing about Whitney is that he's supposed to be a guy whose value is above and beyond what the sack numbers are. You know, he's supposed to be a guy that can play the run and rush the passer and be used in coverage somewhat. And so far, he hasn't done most of those things the way you were expecting him to do, to the point where, you know, the Texans have lined up in four-man fronts with guys. At times, guys like Carlos Watkins are playing like a 4-3 defensive end because the outside linebackers have been so bad at stopping the run that it's actually necessitated a shift to the Texans being more of a 4-3 defense than a 3-4 defense. And I think that where the Texans are right now is some teams will look at certain players on this roster and what you hope is they think, okay, well, we would do something different with him, or he'd be better with us. Duke Johnson, very much so, I think, is a guy that people will look at Duke Johnson and say, well, you traded a third rounder for him last year, and then you didn't use him in the passing game, so why did you even trade for him? And they would say the same thing this year. Okay, great, we understood that you traded – we understand that you traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson in a draft pick, but nobody really thought that you expected David Johnson to be your bell cow, did you? But I guess Bill O'Brien did. So Duke Johnson's just sitting there, and I think 20 teams in the league would think that they could do a better job utilizing Duke Johnson's talents than what the Texans have done. So he might have the most value of any of these guys.
Yeah, and the good news is if you're trying to unload Duke Johnson is that, yes, one, the teams around the league probably look at the Texans offensively, just big picture, and there's probably a lot of what the hell is this team doing going on. So, yeah, that's what number one. And number two is when Duke Johnson's gotten his hands on the ball, he's by and large looked pretty good. You know, maybe not running the football this year, although when you're getting two or three touches in the run game, it's probably hard to get into any sort of rhythm. But last year, Seth, he was third among running backs in yards per touch. He was averaging between 6.5 and 7 yards per touch last year. Like, that was the frustrating thing. It wasn't like they traded for Duke Johnson and he was a lemon. They traded for Duke Johnson. When he touched the ball, he was really, really good. But it felt like they had him on a pitch count or something. It was really, really strange. And by the way, Lockham 4 mentions Duke Johnson and Darren Fells also getting some interest from teams around the league. So
Darren Fells, and that's where you have to make that decision, man. All right, what do I want to do for the future versus what do I want right now? I feel like the Texans without Darren Fells right this moment would be I'd say big trouble. I mean, they're 1-6. Yeah. I don't know. I got to quit acting like all of a sudden they're knocking on the door or something. But I want to watch quality football. I think Darren Fells has been enough of a threat and an asset that I don't want to watch this Texans offense without Darren Fells out there. I am surprised. You know, I'm curious what Darren Fells would get, given that he's an older guy, then, you know, the upside's going to be limited. But if there's a team out there that thinks that they just need some tight end depth, or at least a viable tight end, and then all of a sudden they're a Super Bowl contender, maybe the price is higher than we expect.
Yeah, I think, for me, Duke Johnson, Darren Fells, Whitney Mercilus, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this about Whitney, as much good football as he's played for the team, but his contract is just brutal. I think Kenny Stills, I think those guys fall into a bucket where I'd say whatever you can get. If you get a six-rounder for them, then go ahead, deal them, move on. I'm sure there's probably people listening going, really, about Whitney Mercilus? Yes, his salary's guaranteed for next year. And I think the other thing to remember too, Seth, is that when they trade these guys, they're going to get salary cap relief when they move them for draft picks. Those salaries for the, you know, pro rata for the second half of the season go off of the books, and you can carry that cap space over into next year. So without getting too deep in the weeds on the you know, the CBA and the salary cap, for example, Kenny Stills, his cap figure is $7 million a year. You trade Kenny Stills right now, there's $3.5 million in cap space that you can immediately carry over into 2021, which is going to be at a super premium this year because the cap is almost inevitably going to go down because there's no fans in the stands this year. The cap is tied to revenue, and revenue is going to be way down in all likelihood going into next year.
Which one of these guys is most likely to be gone a week and a half
now?
Well, gosh, one week from now specifically. I'm going to say that the position group that has the most depth and the most viable players right now is the wide receivers group. let me think real quick. Across the board on the team, yeah, the wide receivers are the deepest position group they have.
Easily.
So because of that, this team can, I think, lose a wide receiver and still improve as the season goes along. Kenny still seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, well, because he's the least involved in what the offense is right now. I'll say this. Fuller and Cooks are the focal point of this Lockham Fora piece right now. And I think Fuller probably gets you more. And I think the danger in moving Cooks is if Fuller and Stills are both free agents after this year. I don't think Will Fuller is back next year, because I think if he gets injured, which is it's a very likely thing, could happen, because it's happened every year that he's been a Houston Texan. If he gets injured, then I don't think the Texans are in a position to franchise tag him or give him a deal, a new contract. I do think even if Fuller got injured and he went into free agency, there would be some team out there that had cap space that would take a chance on giving Will Fuller a deal. The Texans don't have that luxury. I think you need to keep Cooks almost, Seth, just as to make sure that you've got viable receivers for Deshaun Watson in 2021 and 2022. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be rebuilding to a certain degree here, and if you have building blocks in place already on reasonable contracts, which Cooks is on a reasonable contract. You could argue that they spent too much to trade for him in terms of draft capital, but like he's doesn't have any guaranteed money. I think that you keep him around. Plus, I like his leadership so far. He seems to genuinely give a damn, which I don't mean to put the bar too low, but when I say like he really gives a damn, I think like he looks every time he gets up to talk, I feel like he's actually genuinely committed to this team and feels responsible for how well it does and for turning it around. So I like that. I like that on Brandon Cooks. Randall Cobb, you gave him too big of a contract, likely. I don't think that was anywhere close to what his market value was. I think his market value was lower. But having said that, he's starting to turn into a guy that can ad lib with Deshaun on the scramble drill. You're starting to see him used more underneath. Those are the kind of two building blocks that you can have for the next couple of years while you work other receivers into the mix and while Deshaun gets some other weapons.
Yeah, you've got too good a quarterback to be having to do a total rebuild on the wide receiver room. You know what? I know that this team is a few years away, provided they hire a competent GM and a really good head coach. They're a couple of years away, you know, unless something miraculous happens, they're a couple of years away from being a contender, but you can't. You can't have a franchise quarterback and then every year you're turning over the receiver room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so Cooks and
Cobb. You know, Sean, I'm not so convinced that they're several years away or even a couple years away. There's really a lot of untapped potential with this offense. And Tim Kelly, even though he's done some things differently from Bill O'Brien that I like, there's only so much you can do in the middle of the season. And ultimately, we're not keeping Tim Kelly around at the end of the season, so it's not like what we're watching right now is the ceiling for the Texans offense. I think this offensive line, with some new coaching and in a new scheme, new offensive coordinator, new position coach, I think this offensive line has genuinely a lot of potential, but it's just untapped right now. So the defense needs some work and needs some actual players, some Jimmies and Joes, especially in the secondary. Oh, my goodness, Sean.
Did you rewatch?
I tried to watch the All-22 yesterday, and
I'm watching a snuff film.
I'm going to have to do it in spells. I'm going to have to.
You're going to have to work in shifts on this thing. You're going to have to watch the Packer game in shifts, one quarter at a time? Is that how you're going to have to do it?
But it is. I'm like, you relive it, and at the beginning you're thinking, wow, they're really getting torn up when they're playing zone. Why are they playing zone? And immediately the next series you're like, why are they playing man? Yeah. How do you have Philip Gaines / Hargrave / anybody cover any of these guys? So suffice to say, they need to bolster the secondary. But on the offensive side of the ball, I think they're a lot closer than it feels and looks right now.
Yeah.
And I think if they nail it with the head coach hire, and that head coach has a good offensive coordinator, he is the offensive coordinator himself, we could see some really good offense next year.
Well, Seth, if we don't think Will Fuller's going to be around next year, then he's, in theory, somebody, and they're 1-6. If we feel like the season is basically over, like the mathematical chances of them doing something miraculous the last 9 games, we feel that that's very, very low. And if we feel like there's a minimal chance that Will Fuller is long for this team, then what's the bar of what you would trade Will Fuller for? Like, what's the round of, like, in theory, if you feel like if the Texans in their heart of hearts feel like, okay, well, you know, the max on this season's probably 6-10 or something like that, and we really don't feel like Will's going to be here next year, should you not unload him for whatever you can get for him, or is there a certain bar where, in Romeo's words, you just don't give him up for peanuts? You don't be the sucker in the room just to help some team out and trade Will Fuller for a fourth or a fifth or something like that.
I think that if Will Fuller got a third round pick, I think that you could sit and say, all right, let's see how this works out for the team that signs him, because, man, Fuller staying healthy is an extreme aberration right now, and it's working out in his contract year really well. That I feel like you just go ahead and say, all right, we're going to take what we can get. This will be the most steady and reliable contribution Will Fuller has given us is this third round pick, and we'll go ahead and take it. Unless, and this is what I wouldn't know, does Jack Easterby want to say, all right, we're going to have a new GM in 3 months. Let this guy, because Will Fuller has extreme talent as a wide receiver.
No doubt.
Let's let the new GM see if maybe he wants to sign Will Fuller to a reasonable 2 or 3 year deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe they figure out a way to actually franchise tag Will Fuller. It's going to be tough with the draft. But this might be one where I'd prefer, even if they get offered a third round pick, I might really prefer the new GM to make this decision and for Easterby to punt on this one. It's too high leverage a situation. There's the payoff is too great if Will Fuller works out, that maybe this is one of those things where you say to a potential GM who's interviewing, hey, look, we've got pieces, we've got assets here. You can decide what you want to do with Will Fuller, but this is one of the things that we've got. You know, this is some of the gunpowder we're working with here.
I think the thing to remember with Fuller is, provided the Texans don't go crazy in free agency, which I don't think they can because of their cap situation, if Will Fuller walks in free agency and gets a really good contract from somebody, you'll get a compensatory pick from him in a year. You know, I mean, that's you got to remember that part of the calculus. People are texting in. Now, this is the stage right now. People are texting in their trade proposals, 713-572-4610.
Oh,
Seth, I have a reaction to this one. I'll see if your reaction's the same as mine. Just gut reaction. What about trading Watt, Merciless, and Fells for a second, third, and a fifth? Watt, Merciless, Fells for a second, okay, third, and a fifth.
Second, third, and a fifth. Fells would be, so those would all be independent. Like those picks are tied to those actual draft.
Yeah, just it'd be with one team. One team looking to trade for a gaggle of players. I would do that deal in a second, in a heartbeat.
I would do it. That sounds like the right. That actually sounds like better value for Merciless than, because of Merciless's contract and his current performance and his age, I don't think you're going to get a third for Merciless, so I would take that.
Yeah, in a second. That you're right. And that was the game changer for me. That was the variable in the whole thing for me. Text message, everybody's mad at the running backs in the line for not being able to run the ball. I think one of the best things about O'Brien being fired is that Mike Devlin will be gone. Mike Devlin's the offensive line coach. Seth, in your mind, this new head coach, whoever it's going to be, what's the most important position group hire? Like, what's the, you know, who the new head coach surrounds himself with is going to dictate quite a bit of the new head coach's success and dictate how this team is able to develop players going forward. What's the most important position coach hire in your mind for the new head coach? Is it offensive line?
I feel like it's offensive line. You know, now a really good defensive backs coach could help out a whole lot next year. It's hard to judge defensive back coaching because so much of it is on the actual physical ability of the defense. Like, you can only do so much with defensive backs who have inadequate physical skills, but if you can at least get them, especially if you're playing like a cover three scheme or something, if you can get them really disciplined, then a really good defensive back coach helps. But offensive line, and this is playing out in college, you know, offensive line coaches are starting to get paid scads and scads of money because it's the least physically talented position on the field and the one that benefits most from solid technique work. Like, really, there are so many really good offensive lines who aren't talented across the board, but because they work in unison and because they have really solid technique, then they become quality offensive lines. I feel like that's the A number one position that I would target if I were, and that might even be the one that if some guy became available even before I had a head coach, that's like I would say, like, all right, I'm going to hire this offensive line coach. Ooh. And if there's some head coach that doesn't realize what an asset he has in this guy, then screw him. I don't want him anyway.
Really? I mean, I would be afraid of turning off a good head coaching candidate that would feel like, what if
that guy sucks.
Okay, well, what if it becomes? What if he feels like that? What if this is a trend? You know, what if it doesn't stop with an offensive line coach? What if this is the team that tells me what to do with my staff every year?
I would assure him, in that good offensive line, that good head coach candidate would understand why I couldn't sit by and watch this guy, because maybe his staff, maybe this coach gets like the head coach at some place or some school gets fired in December.
Yeah.
The next Texans head coach would understand. Oh wow, you went ahead and basically locked up Dante Scarnecchia for me before I even got here. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
And you're promising you'll never do that with anybody else or anything. And maybe even, you know what? Give the guy the option. This is what I would do with Cal McNair's money as I spend it. I'd say, Cal McNair. Look, Eric Bieniemy. Frankly, I've guaranteed this offensive line coach's contract already. I'm paying him $10 million over the next few years. But if you really don't want him, he's gone. Okay, I'll do that for you. But he's not. Eric Bieniemy is going to take that good offensive line coach because he understands how important it is.
All right, the bracket is up for the next Texans head coach. It's a juicy matchup today. It's a 4-5, and these are guys who are a part of Bruce Arians' staff in Tampa Bay. Byron Leftwich, OC, the 4 seed, versus Todd Bowles, the DC of the best defense in football right now, is the 5 seed in the Brian Gain regional of our bracket. Go find the bracket at sportsradio610.com, or you can find the link at sportsradio610 on Twitter. As we head into the 7 o'clock hour, prominent broadcaster says there is a no-brainer, speaking of the head coach for the Texans, a no-brainer is the top head coaching candidate. You'll hear it next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.